You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Monday, July 19th, 2021. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Dr. Michael Osterholm, director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy, and the former member of the COVID-19 Transition Advisory Board for then-President-elect Joe Biden on the state of COVID in this country and around the world. Meanwhile, in Washington, Chuck Schumer sets a Portman Cinema infrastructure test vote for Wednesday and sets a deadline for a top-line agreement on the all-Democratic reconciliation infrastructure bill. Meanwhile, speaking of the former, Portman now says that greater IRS enforcement as a pay-for of the bipartisan bill is off the table. Because... The CDC director warns of a pandemic of the unvaccinated, as every state in the nation is seeing an uptick in infections. Delta, now the variant, sweeps across the African continent as Namibia and Tunisia are the top countries for per capita deaths. Canada's vaccination rate is now higher than the U.S. as England lifts its restrictions. Meanwhile, in Texas, a George W. Bush-appointed federal judge rules that DACA is illegal. No more applications for the time being. The Biden administration transfers its first detainee from Guantanamo, a man who had been recommended for discharge over 5 years ago. U.S. to formally accuse China of hacking Microsoft. And a private Israeli firm has developed spyware, which has been used to hack cell phones of journalists and activists around the world. Lastly, it's day 14 of the Frito-Lay strike in Kansas as the Pepsi boycott grows in response to that. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, folks. Beginning of another exciting week in the, on one hand, infrastructure lottery, and on the other hand, watching this country sort of eat itself when it comes to vaccination refusal. And here to watch all of it with me, Emma Vigeland. Hello, Emma. How are you?
I'm well. How are you? I mean, exciting is one way of putting it,
right? Yes. It's exciting and sad.
Yeah.
Sad and exciting.
Sounds like the Harry Potter books that you're reading right now.
We were talking Harry Potter. Saul and I went to the Harry Potter store in New York City. That's not an endorsement.
And you even saying that sounds like a non-endorsement.
I'm not going to endorse that. It's like I, on one hand, I'm glad that he's into something that is written and not, you know, on his iPad, you know, with Minecraft. On the other hand, I sort of feel bad. Like, do we really need to, like, does this really need to be a commodity? But and then on the other hand, I was sort of excited to taste butterbeer.
How was it? Was it actual beer?
It is essentially butterscotch soda.
Oh.
So once you taste it, then you're not so excited to taste it again.
If it's it was actual beer, it would be rich. Maybe they have an adult version.
They don't.
Oh.
They did also have butterscotch ice cream. And so that was, yeah. So there you go.
You're
but
right.
Moving right along, want to get to the doctor soon. But there is a sense now between what's happening in Canada. Remember, like 2 or 3 months ago, everyone's hair was on fire in Canada, and we had people calling in talking about what a crap show their vaccine rollout was. And then they figured it out. They got a way to distribute it. And now all of a sudden their vaccination rate is higher than ours because we have a real problem in this country in terms of, on one hand, like, you know, trust of government, trust of science. And then on another hand, a deliberate agenda, a political agenda, to prevent people from being vaccinated as some way of, in its crassest form, I guess, to deny Joe Biden a win, but also to promote this notion of a sort of libertarian streak. And of course, it flies in the face of, you know, we've had vaccination passports that have existed in the past where you need to be vaccinated to travel to a certain country. We have had vaccination passports to the extent that, like, if you want to send your kid to public school, they need certain vaccinations. We have vaccination passports for camps. Can't send your kid to a certain to most camps unless they've received their vaccinations.
Right. And it's well, and globally now kids are getting vaccinated for those other diseases at a less significant rate because of, you know, the backlog from COVID vaccines. So some of these things are going to continue to sprout up, like measles and all those things.
Right. And then, you know, we just saw Tennessee last week made a concerted effort to pull back on its efforts to vaccinate kids for all the things that kids get vaccinated for. And so this is insane. It's nuts. It's nuts. I mean, this is, and if there was, you know, I don't know if there was ever, if anybody ever needed proof that Donald Trump was not an anomaly, that Donald Trump wasn't the problem, but rather a symptom of a deeper problem in this country, this is it, right? I mean, this is it right here. Like, the idea that there's a concerted effort by the conservatives in this country to inhibit vaccinations, particularly, you know, like, even at this point, we are late in the game in terms of, like, being vaccine hesitant because you're not sure about the safety of the vaccine. But here is Alex Berenson, one of the premier misinformers in the country, I would say, on with Tucker Carlson. And we will have an epidemiologist on in a couple of minutes to assess this statement, the idea that masks are symbolic. But here is Berenson and Carlson.
Alex Berenson joins us now. Alex, thanks so much for coming on.
Hi, Tucker.
There's just so much here, and you may know too much to give a crisp answer. So I'm just going to throw it out to you. How do you assess the developments I just explained?
So, look, masks are useless for their wearers. Again, we've known this for at least a year. We have a randomized control trial showing it. They probably do little to nothing for source control, i.e. to block the transmission of virus. We've known that, too. Maybe if you, you know, decide to wear an N95 mask and have it on your face the whole time, you know, you're out and never touch it, you get some minor benefit, although even that is not really proven. As you said, I mean, what I've grown to conclude over the last 12 months is that masks are very simply symbolic. All they are is a sign you are in a dangerous time. You need to listen to us. You know, if I don't see people wearing masks, I forget to be scared. And that's right. Why they want people wearing masks. And, you know, it just could not be clearer.
The psychological damage they're doing here. So we're now told there's a third wave. And this may undercut the effectiveness of the vaccines. How effective are the vaccines? Do we know so far?
The vaccines, unfortunately, appear to be declining in effectiveness very quickly. And I believe this is why Twitter has me blocked. So I've been blocked for 12 hours, Tucker. But this is a very clear warning signal. I've never been blocked on Twitter before. And I've written a lot of stuff about masks and, you know, lockdowns and lots of stuff that people have not liked, even though it's all been backed by data, all been backed by, you know, primary government sources and scientific papers and stuff. Vaccines appear to me to be a third rail. You know, there's tremendous public health pressure, and there's also tremendous financial pressure in favor of these.
Well, there you have it. I mean, we will ask a top epidemiologist in the country if vaccines are getting less effective as opposed to there are certain variants where they have less efficacy in terms of infections versus, you know, hospitalizations or deaths. We will fact check that for Alex Berenson in just a moment. But this is a guy who is known as being more wrong than just about any public person.
Pandemic's wrongest man.
There
read
you go.
That piece in The Atlantic and then trust this guy or don't.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Michael Osterholm. Folks. Oh, gosh. Is it? It is. Well. You know, my pitch about bidets, ladies and gentlemen.
Unfortunately, we do.
Yes.
Well, it's just your pitch.
It's not my pitch. I mean, I won't read it today, but this is, they suggest to you a certain copy. And it's usually talking about the hygiene or the sensation of your buttocks. And this, of course, during COVID, big toilet paper shortage. At one point, Kyle says to me, you got to get a bidet. I'm like, dude, I can't invest that kind of thing. And then just coincidentally, Hello Tushy wanted to advertise with us. I said, I'll try it out. See if I like it. If I don't, I'm not going to. And I never looked back.
Whoa.
How's that for a pun? Look, you're going to keep your sweatiness all clean all summer with the brand new Hello Tushy 3.0 modern bidet attachment. And incidentally, I got the 2.0 originally, and now I'm at the 3.0. It is stylish. It is eco-friendly. It is super easy to install, and it saves you money on an operating basis because you're not paying for toilet paper. You just basically pat yourself when you're done. Hello Tushy doesn't just clean your butt with a precise stream of fresh water. It cleans itself with the Smart Spray automatic nozzle. It attaches to your existing toilet. Like I say, no electricity or extra plumbing needed. Super easy to install. Cuts your toilet paper use by over 80%. Pays for itself in a few months. Yes, because it is really surprisingly inexpensive. Hello Tushy also has you covered with a 60-day risk-free guarantee and a 12-month warranty. Already got a Hello Tushy on the pot? Treat your butt to a new 3.0 model. And if you're new to the revolution, know that you're joining millions of happy Hello Tushy customers. I'm telling you, folks, it is a revelation. People have said it before. You know, you don't wash your hands. You get your hands dirty. You don't wash it by just putting a dry piece of paper on it. No, you use water. It is, it's an old, but an obvious and new technology. Defeat swamp ass. Go to HelloTushy.com/majority. Get 10% off plus free shipping. This is a special offer for our listeners at HelloTushy.com/majority for 10% off. HelloTushy.com/majority. And folks, our new guy. Have we introduced our new guy yet?
You're doing it letter by letter.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Our BR, who is with us now, in many respects, came to us from ZipRecruiter, because Brendan came to us via ZipRecruiter and BR came to us via Brendan. So it's like a ZipRecruiter electricity.
Yeah.
If you're a business owner who's hiring, you know that you face a lot of challenges when it comes to finding the right person for your role. We needed someone so specific for this job, and to have, you know, a stranger come in and have them have the skill set already there in this business was nuts. But ZipRecruiter found him. Hiring can feel like trying to find a needle in a haystack, and we found him. You can post your job on some job board, but then all you do is hope that the right person comes along. And that's why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/majority. When you post a job on ZipRecruiter, it gets sent out to over 100 job sites with one click. And then ZipRecruiter's got this technology that matches people with the right skills and experience for your job and then actively invites them to apply. It's what happened with Brendan. In fact, ZipRecruiter is so effective, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. It's no wonder over 2.3 million businesses have come to ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs, and this is one of them. So while other companies overwhelm you with way too many options, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for, the needle in the haystack. Right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at this web address, ZipRecruiter.com/majority. Once again, remember, go to this unique place, ZipRecruiter.com/majority. Majority, M-A-J-O-R-I-T-Y. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Okay, I want to welcome back to the program Dr. Michael Osterholm. He is the director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy, was also a member of Joe Biden's COVID-19 transition team advisory board. He's logging on as we speak. Dr. Osterholm, thank you so much for joining us again. I'm here with Emma Vigeland.
Thank you. Hi, good day. Good to see you.
I've got a lot of questions. I've asked our listeners, for some questions that we can ask. But let's just start with an overall sense of, like, you know, where we are in the course of this pandemic. I think, you know, our audience is fully aware, at the very least, of the Delta variant. And that it is more infectious, if not more virulent, and maybe you can clarify that for us as well. But give us a sense from your perspective where we are in this pandemic.
Well, first of all, we have to understand we're really dealing with, in a sense, two different pandemics right now. There's the pandemic of the vaccinated countries, and there's the pandemic of the unvaccinated countries. Let me just say this, step back and say, remember, right now we have about 6.4 billion people in the face of the earth that live in low and middle income countries, for which less than 2% have had any access to vaccine. Where that's occurring, we are seeing major, major activity with Delta, surpassing any peak we've seen. South Africa right now has just hit the highest peak that any country's hit, period, since the beginning of the pandemic in terms of cases, deaths, and hospitalizations. Tunisia's healthcare system has crashed. We're seeing, even today as we speak on the Olympics, the highest number of cases reported in Tokyo since the pandemic began. We're seeing that throughout the world. So what's happening is this virus is, in a sense, almost rotating around the world in a non-predicted way, meaning which country is going to be the next one to get hit. Iran right now is in its fifth surge it's had. The worst one so far. So from that standpoint, if you look at what's happening throughout much of the world, it is at the very peak of the pandemic activity we've seen to date. If you're in the countries that are vaccinated or have access to a substantial vaccine, we're still seeing a major problem. Right now, we have more people hospitalized in ICUs in Florida, Mississippi, and Louisiana than we had at any time in the pandemic to date. If you look at what's happening, all 50 states in the country right now are seeing sizable increases in cases. And in fact, if you look, 30 states right now have had over 100% increase in cases in the last 14 days. This is largely among those 100 million people in the United States that have not gotten vaccinated yet, 100 million people. These are also people who have not been previously infected, so they have no residual protection. That's a lot of human wood for this coronavirus forest fire to burn. And so we're going to see marked activity here. Those who predicted no summertime peak, it would be a fall-winter peak, I'm afraid you're unfortunately off. This is a summer peak. Why we didn't see more of a peak activity with B117 in April, we don't know. It was Michigan and Minnesota, but this one is for real. It's hitting all of us. And it's hitting England right now on Saturday. England reported 55,000 new cases. They are even have higher vaccination rates than we do. If we had extrapolated that 55,000 to the United States based on population, that would have been about 225,000 cases a day in the U.S. They're ahead of us by 6 weeks, maybe 4 weeks. We surely have every reason to believe right now we're going to see what's happened in England, what's happened in the Netherlands, what's happened in other highly vaccinated countries here over the course of the next several months.
And England just opened up.
Freedom Day today is probably the most counterproductive, absolutely inane step that anybody could take. It was on the books. They had it planned already, so they weren't going to back down. As you know, their prime minister is in quarantine right now. You know, it's their health secretary has been infected. You're watching what it's doing this morning in the Olympics. Here we are watching new people literally almost by the hour become documented as having been infected. Or in quarantine. So I think, you know, we are in a very difficult state right now with this pandemic. The good news is we do have effective vaccines. The bad news is we don't have them for the world. And even when we do have them, we have a sizable number of people who refuse to get them.
So when we say infected, right, I mean, if you are vaccinated, the chances of you going into the hospital and dying seem to be incredibly low. Is that correct?
Well, let me put one qualifier on. It's incredibly, incredibly low if you're not an elderly person or possibly certain immune deficiency conditions, okay? If you're someone who is elderly, who might be in long-term care, frail, it still is highly protective, but not as good. So where we've seen the real serious illnesses and the deaths have been in vaccine recipients have been primarily in that same group that we see influenza vaccine failures and deaths. But so on a whole, let me just affirm, you're absolutely right. The vaccines have been really remarkable. You know, we're still working more on understanding what the one dose J&J vaccine does. I think we'll be getting more updates on that in the near term. But at least with the mRNA vaccines, it's been remarkable.
Is there any difference between the that is discernible in that regard in terms of Moderna and Pfizer when we talk about those vaccines in terms of infection rate with and we're really basically talking about the Delta variant, right? Because to the extent that there is any breakthrough infections on the wildfire or the wild type or the other variant, that it. Those are so small it's
Delta right now. Delta is the 1,200-pound gorilla in the corner.
Is there any difference, or do we have enough data to tell that Moderna is slightly more effective against it? Or
we don't. But to your point earlier, Sam, you raised a very good point about what do we know about Delta. These variants, again, remember, are just mutated viruses that, you know, until last November, we thought that these variants among the strains of COVID were just like talking about the same car, except one's blue, one's red, one's green, one's yellow. It really didn't make any difference how they ran or how they felt. Well, in November, we realized, wait a minute, there are three buckets here of concern about these variants that are really important. One, are they more infectious, as you pointed out? Number two, do they cause more severe illness? And number three, do they in fact actually have advantages to evade the immune protection from either vaccine or from natural infection? Well, with Delta, we know this is much more infectious. Alpha was the one that was really infectious. Well, this is at least 40 to 60% more infectious than Alpha was. This puts what we call the R naught or the RT, this reproductive number, how many people on average will one person infect? We were concerned at 1.5 and 2, meaning for every person, if you infected two people, the cases were doubling every 5 to 7 days. This one may be as high as 8. And this is a very certain level. Now, to understand that, there was a paper from China that came out last week that was really a very remarkable piece of work, where they followed people very closely after exposure to infected individuals and actually were taking throat swabs, et cetera, determining what their status was. They found that they actually started shedding the virus with Delta up to a day earlier than it was with other strains. But more importantly, they found up to 1,000 times the amount of virus in the throats and respiratory tract of people with Delta than the other strains. So this can explain why, you know, somebody basically could be much more infectious and cause that transmission. So that's why today when I say, you know, if you are someone who's not been vaccinated, or you're someone who has just decided I'm done with it, this virus will find you.
Well, how connected that is that to then the unvaccinated, right? The metastasizing of the virus, the creation of new variants. I mean, I know it is connected, but how much of that is just a direct impact of lack of vaccination?
Yeah, well, you know, Emma, that's a really important question. And I guess it's kind of a perspective piece. What I mean by that is I'm looking here at 330 million Americans with 100 million are not yet vaccinated. Surely when you get infected, every time this virus reproduces, it lends itself to new variants. It just it doesn't reproduce well. And many of the mistakes it makes are actually fatal to the virus, or less likely to make it more harmful. But a few of them are just the opposite, which we're concerned about. But when I put the perspective of the high-income countries with vaccine, and I look at, you know, our 100 million not vaccinated compared to the 6.4 billion in the low and middle-income countries, right now that's where the fight's at. That's where the whole issue of variant development is really at its worst. And so, you know, I surely don't want to see variants develop in the United States or any other country with these vaccines, but I absolutely know the major variant pressure is going to come from low-income countries that God knows when they're going to get vaccine in the future.
That's an important point to keep in mind, and I want to circle back on those efforts, like, you know, what it's going to take in terms of the vaccination. But just to get back, the Delta replicates at a much faster rate within the body. Is that mitigated by the vaccination? And if it is mitigated by a vaccination, does it also make it harder for a vaccinated person to pass it on?
Yeah. So let me just clarify one thing, because you raise a very important point. It's not that the virus is replicating faster. It's just more of it. It starts showing up sooner. But again, not necessarily because it's, in fact, reproducing itself faster. It's like if a human gestation went from 9 months to 4 months. That's not what's happening, okay? You just have somebody who's putting out triplets and quadruplets and whatever, okay? And in this case, the vaccines that we have, particularly the mRNA vaccines, the AstraZeneca vaccine, all appear to do a really good job against the Delta variant if, in fact, you have both doses. If you have one dose, you still get protection against serious illness, hospitalization, and death, but not nearly as good as getting both doses. Again, the question still remains about how well does the single dose J&J vaccine work, and we're still trying to collect that kind of information.
Okay, and so does it make it easier? Does it make it harder to pass on? Like,
In fact, if you prevent something from occurring, you can't pass it on. So meaning that if, in fact, I don't get infected, then I'm not infectious. And so that's the big piece. So you're right. This is what can help drop transmission. The more people that are vaccinated, think of it like rods in a reaction. This case, it's a virus reaction. And the more immune people we put into that reaction, the less there's going to be. And so you're right. This is what's helpful, getting vaccinated.
But I'm not even talking on necessarily a population level. I'm talking in terms of if I happen to get a breakthrough infection having had two shots, does it diminish my versus?
I got you.
Versus somebody who hasn't gotten shot, am I less likely to pass it on because the nature of my infection is not as strong? Because I'm not going to get hospitalized. I'm not going to go. I'm not going to get. You know. I'm not going to get. I'm not going to die. You know, statistically speaking.
Yeah.
Does that mean that I also have less of ability to pass it on? Is my R not lower than a non-vaccinated person's R not?
We're going to make an epidemiologist out of you yet.
I'm working on it.
No, that's good. That's good. No, you're absolutely right. That's exactly the case, is that when we look at studies that have tried to understand how often does somebody who's fully vaccinated, once they do have a breakthrough infection, remember, it's a vaccine that's 90, 95% effective. If you give millions and millions of doses and you have lots of infections, you're still going to get some people who have breakthroughs. But in this case, it is actually exactly as you said. It actually does reduce dramatically your ability to transmit it on if you should have a breakthrough infection.
Okay, so that's good, because, you know, many of us have young children who can't be vaccinated, and
absolutely,
the last thing you want to do is give your kid COVID.
That's right.
And young kids with the Delta variant, do we know are they more likely to get hospitalized than they were with the wild type if they do get infected?
Well, you know, you hit on this point earlier, and I didn't really address it, about are we seeing more severe illness with Delta? And it's really unclear at this point. Clearly, we're seeing very ill people, but at a somewhat lower rate than we did before. And why is that? Because the most severe cases were in those 60, 65 years of age and older. And that's the group we've really vaccinated. As much as we have holes in vaccination, that's the one area we've done better. Now, we're still far below what they've done in England. But that gives you some sense. So to go back to kids, though, one of the challenges we have right now, and this is where I have a bone to pick with the CDC about the report that they put out several weeks ago, indicating that, in fact, there was limited transmission to and by kids in the school setting, and you could probably be as close as 3 feet apart. There's a real problem with that report, and that is almost all the data collected and used in that came from the first 8 months of the pandemic. During that time, that was true. We didn't see really very efficient transmission to and by kids. We didn't see nearly as many severe illnesses in those kids. But once the Alpha variant first arose, that B.1.1.7 last January, things began to change dramatically. Now with Delta, I mean, you've been watching the news and seeing all these camp outbreaks that are occurring right now. You know, we are seeing kids getting infected, transmitting the virus, and being hospitalized. Fortunately, it's still less than we see for adults, but it is still a problem. The other thing that's turning out to be a challenge is that we're seeing potentially up to 20% of kids going on developing this long COVID condition, which is a real concern.
That is one of the questions that was asked. If I am a vaccinated person, and obviously we're seeing 20% of kids who are infected having long COVID symptoms is very scary, I think. If you are vaccinated and you are infected, do we have any data yet on your, you know, because I've actually known some people, or, you know, first or second hand who have gotten infected and with the vaccine, and they don't go to the hospital. They, you know, it was like sort of like having the flu for a couple of days. It wasn't pleasant, but it wasn't. But how much more of a propensity do you have to get long COVID, be a long hauler, as they call it, if you are vaccinated with the Delta? Do we have enough data on that?
We don't really have enough data. But again, what we are looking at is you surely have less severe symptoms, and the number of different signs and symptoms you have is less. And that has been correlated with the likelihood of getting long COVID. So, you know, we need to get more information on that. But right now, what information we do have would support that the vaccines do reduce the number of people also who, if they do have breakthroughs, go on and develop long COVID.
I imagine saying the name Alex Berenson is probably one of the most offensive things I could say to you. But he was just on Tucker Carlson last night saying masks are ineffective and they're largely symbolic. A, is that true? B, is there value wearing a mask? If I'm vaccinated and I'm going to go into like the hardware store, I understand it's you know, it maybe put aside like it puts people at rest, or it signals that I'm taking it seriously. But is that just like one more piece of Swiss cheese that I'm putting in front of my face, essentially, that says like, you know what, I could actually mitigate the viral load I get, and being vaccinated, I could actually prevent myself from even a breakthrough infection.
Yeah.
Is that possible?
Well, you know, this is not a simple one-word answer, and that's what everybody wants today. They don't want nuance. They want either yes or no. Are you for it or are you against it? And I think what we've done is a very poor job of educating the public about how to use cloth face coverings, for example, which people label as masks. Masks are all very different from that piece of cloth that fits over your face, if you even include it over your nose, all the way to what we call N95 respirators, or actual masks that most people call, but are very, very different in their effectiveness and how they work. And, you know, there's a group, ACGIH, which is a group that was originally government industrial hygienists, have now opened up to all comers industrial hygiene. These are the people who really have the expertise to look at how does respiratory protection work? What are the devices? These are the people that are constantly learning about that. And they've actually put out data based on the CDC's original estimate that you could get infected within 15 minutes of being in a room. So imagine, instead of a virus excreting somebody, imagine you walk in a room and somebody's smoking, because that's an aerosol. That's what creates these very fine particles that float in the air. So if you can breathe that air in and smell that smoke, then you know you're also, if that were an infected person, you'd be basically getting a dose. Well, CDC has determined that after about 15 minutes, that's enough time for the concentration of virus in the air to inhale it in to get what we call an infectious dose, okay? The group that I just referred to, this ACGIH, have actually put out a document, the time to infectious dose for someone not infected with COVID or someone with infected with COVID. If I'm in a room, and as I pointed out, 15 minutes, I'm done, okay? If I'm in a room and I put a face cloth covering on, just a loose face cloth covering has been, I'm basically infected within 20 additional minutes. If I have a surgical mask on, I get 30 additional minutes. If I have an N95 respirator on, I can get up to 25 hours of protection. And so one of the challenges we've had is we've done a very poor job of educating the public. And there was at one time when these N95 respirators, you can get at any hardware store today, et cetera, were in short supply for our healthcare. Today, that's not the case. So when I talk about masks, I hate that term because it's like talking about broadcasters. And we all know, Sam, there are a lot of broadcasters just not up to you. You know, they're just not up to snuff, right?
Don't pat his ego, please.
Oh, Emma, you too. Okay, so anyway, but the bottom line is that, you know, we've been doing a survey at our center where we actually freeze frames of news media coverage of public events. Go look at who's wearing a mask. Up to 25% of them wear it underneath their nose. That's like fixing three of the five screen doors in your submarine. Okay, right. I mean, what good is that? And so one of the challenges is if I have an N95 respirator on, I get some real protection, okay? If I just call it a mask and put a slap a piece of cloth on my face, I still get, you know, another 20 minutes of protection in that environment. But if I'm there all day, I still get infected. And so our job has to be to educate the public. Don't just call it a mask or a mask mandate. Get the highest quality protection you can. And to me, that's why I still recommend them. It's like a seatbelt. You know, if you're only getting a waist wound seat belt, what protection do you get? You get some. You don't fly out of the car. But if I have a complete harness strap, I have a collapsible body, I have airbags, I have shard glass that doesn't cause the sharpness to occur, I've got a computer on board that slows down my vehicle before I hit whatever I'm going to hit, those all combined make for a much safer environment. So I look at masks like vaccines itself, they're a combination. And it, the one thing that it does, just like a vaccine, you can keep from getting infected, you also, if you are infected and not knowing it, it'll reduce the amount of virus you put out. But please don't count on it to be the be-all, end-all. The only thing we have right now is vaccines that do that.
And talking about not counting on something to be a be-all, end-all, but I'm just curious about if there was any development in this research about blood type and the propensity to get COVID. I saw that there was some research happening. Is there anything more conclusive or trending in any direction in that area?
You know, early on, blood type came up several times. We've not seen anything since that time that really has developed into what I would call a firm understanding of someone's at more at risk. You know, what we're finding with time is it's just a function of if you're there, you'll get it. You know, I've heard from so many people over and over again over the last 18 months, you know, if you just did what they did in Sweden, or you just did what they did in India, or you just did what they did in X and Y, you know, I've heard over and over again in Vietnam and so forth, but we, for months, we saw very few cases. And then all of a sudden, look what happened. It blew up. And what this virus is doing is it's just basically making the rounds of the earth. And some places get hit multiple times, some places don't. I don't know why India went almost 8 months with almost no activity and then became the hottest place on the earth. That's been a challenge for us to understand. I don't understand why last spring, when this B117 or alpha variant, we call it now, landed in the United States, it didn't do what it was doing around the world. It just hit Minnesota and Michigan. Now look what's happening. Delta is hitting everywhere. So it really isn't a function as much of the host in terms of you get it or not. If you have underlying health conditions, if you're older, if you're obese or heavier, these are all risk factors for getting severe disease, but not necessarily getting disease.
Speaking of risk factors, and then I want to ask about that sort of like the lack of predictability associated with this, but in terms of risk factors, what do we now know in terms of like risk? Like initially, I think asthma, people were very concerned about asthma, but as we went on, my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, asthma wasn't ended up being associated with higher propensity. But what about, diabetes seems to be very problematic, and correct me where I'm wrong here.
No, you're right. You're right. You're absolutely right. Yep.
What about Down's syndrome? Do we know if that is more associated with?
At this point, we don't have any evidence that is more associated, but you're right. And we're learning more about these. A lot of these are interacting factors. And what I mean by that is if I'm older, if I'm heavier and I have a condition, does that even put me at greater risk than if I'm younger and don't have, you know, a weight issue, and then I have a condition? One of the challenges we have, of course, is one ages, one's immune system become less effective, or in some cases, they're out of whack, and so you have to take medication to actually reduce your immune response, like certain kinds of arthritis, et cetera, which then in turn can dumb down the immune response in a positive way for your condition, but in a negative way if you get exposed to COVID. And so that's the challenge we have right now, is trying to deal with all that. But I can tell you right now, the major risk factors are age and obesity and immune compromised, immune deficient status. Those are the three primary drivers.
Okay. And so let's talk about this notion of, I mean, it seems to me that to a certain extent, people have been modeling, you know, how the pandemic is going to go by looking at 1918. But it's starting to feel like we're now outside of what we could learn from 1918, right? I mean,
yep.
Why wasn't, I mean, right now it seems to me that it's quite possible, because I'm hearing about Delta Plus in Israel, which is a subset, and maybe you know something about that you can share with us. But it does feel like this concept of, you know, when we have 2% of the world vaccinated, this concept of like, it's going to keep going and there's going to be more variants, like this could last for, it feels like years. And why didn't that happen with 1918? Was it just by chance? What can you tell us about this Delta Plus?
Well, first of all, when you look at the concept of a pandemic, remember that's a worldwide epidemic basically occurring everywhere. That's why when people say the pandemic's done in the United States, whoa, wait a minute. It's a worldwide epidemic and it's occurring everywhere and even still here. And as soon as we forget about it, it comes back here. But I think the important point is that a coronavirus, the cause of COVID-19, is just different than a flu virus. And we've really never had a coronavirus pandemic that we've ever been aware of, even in history. Everything we can trace back even well before we had the ability to test for viruses and know had the look, feel, and smell of influenza, meaning that would it emerge any time of the year, would have go through various surges. Some were worse than others. 1918, it was the second one that was worse. In some locations, it was a later one that was worse. But within 2 years, the 1918 flu virus settled into becoming a seasonal flu virus, just like what happened in 1957, 1968, and maybe you can call in 2009. That virus first emerged H1N1 in Mexico in March, April, caused a peak here in March, April time period around the world, smaller, and then it caused a great big peak in cases in late August, September, and early October. It went away before we even had vaccine. And then eventually it morphed into seasonal flu. So right now, when we have seasonal influenza, you're often getting infected by the ancestral lineage of the 2009 pandemic strain. With this coronavirus, we don't see that yet. What has happened is it just keeps burning and burning and burning. It has not had any evidence of seasonality. Look what's happening again right now. I mean, last summer, our big peak in July in this country was the southern states driven by this. And then we had another peak again in January, again driven by the southern states. Here it is now, July, the southern states again. That's not seasonal, you know. So I think that at this point, we just don't know enough. You know, 6 weeks ago, the two hottest spots in the earth, one was Nepal, Pakistan, and India. The other one was Uruguay, Paraguay, and Argentina. They have one thing in common. They're both at 30 degrees latitude. The difference is one's north and one's south. That's not seasonality. So I think to answer it for you, we haven't seen this become a flu-like virus yet, and I don't think we're going to.
Yeah, and I just wanted to, I know you have to go soon, quickly ask about the likelihood of booster shots. I know Pfizer's obviously pushing for it. They have a financial incentive for that. But would that make any sense in terms of curbing something like the Delta variant that's more infectious?
Yeah, I mean, in fact, this week, the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, an advisory group to the CDC, is taking up this very issue. And one of the things we have to look at, and the Israeli data actually gave us some hint, that particularly among the older population, there may be some waning immunity. It isn't as effective, and you may need a third dose. But we're not there yet. But don't be surprised if we end up getting booster doses. Again, this is a bit of a troubling situation for me, because every time we take one of those doses and use it in a high-income country, we're taking it away from a low-income country from having any vaccine at all, because there's just a limited amount that can be produced. I'm not so worried about the companies making money on this vaccine, because this is one where if they could make all the vaccine in the world they could, they still couldn't. We wouldn't have enough. So it's, in a sense, a way of saying that, yes, they will make money on it, but it's not as if they're trying to corner a market. We will not have enough vaccine for years to come.
Anything that you feel that we should know before you go? I know you have a heart out here, but...
Thank you for the opportunity to talk about these issues. I just think we have to do a much better job sharing this kind of information with the public. You know, there's a lot of people in the public that are convinced this pandemic's done. It's over with. And they don't understand it's not over with us. And I think that's the challenge we have, is how do we get through it? What are we going to do in the fall with school open? You know, we're not going to have vaccines for kids yet. What does that mean relative to what we're finding with this new enhanced transmission in kids? How can we have these discussions without it becoming political, without it becoming angry, and just say, you know, we're trying to just share the best science we have. We're not going to have all the information. And how do we move forward? And so, you know, I appreciate the opportunity for venues like this, where it's really very frank and very, you know, hard questioning, but it's also just the facts. Let's stick with the facts.
And so in terms of that school, the only thing that we can do for the kids now, because they can't get vaccinated, is to make sure that as many people around them are vaccinated.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better. That's exactly. And, you know, that's not a political statement. That's just reality, you know? So anyway.
Dr. Michael Osterholm, thank you so much for your
always
time.
Always good to talk to you. Thank you,
really
guys.
Appreciate it.
Take you there. Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
There you have it, folks. We're going to take a quick break. I could have kept him for an hour or two, but he's one of the premier epidemiologists in the world and probably has other people to talk to.
Right.
Really just appreciate it. Obviously, I didn't get to all of the questions that people had, but I think we hit enough of some of the basic building blocks. There are no yes or no answers to this, right? I mean, like, you know, someone writes, can a vaccinated individual who's contracted COVID transmit the virus to others? The answer is yes, but it is less effective than two unvaccinated people because the vaccination diminishes your viral load. And that is why you don't get as sick. And it's also this that principle. The more sick that you get from COVID is generally a function of how much it grows in your body, because maybe you lack immunized, you lack immunity, or, and the age that was also associated with that. Maybe there's some other element, but in the main, vaccinated people transmit it, even if they get infected, less than non-vaccinated people. But again, this is also on a population level. For any given individual, is that necessarily hold? Not necessarily. All of this, protecting yourselves, your family, all of it is basically, an odds thing. And this dynamic has not changed since the very beginning of the pandemic. If I stay at home and see no people ever, I'm not going to get COVID. If I let one person in, I have a little bit more chance of getting COVID. If that one person happens to work in a bar and is going out at a bar every night and nobody's wearing it, then it goes up a little bit. I mean, it's just a matter of risk factors here. And at one point, and everybody wants to know, at what point have I crossed the Rubicon? At what point have I crossed into I'm accepting too much risk and not enough risk? And on some level, that has to be addressed by the individual. But there are certain broad lines, essentially, that are the risk-reward situation does not make sense. And that is, not getting vaccinated doesn't make sense. Unless you have a very specific and clear sort of problem, like physical reaction to vaccines. The idea of being hesitant at that point, particularly now, seems absurd. And the amount of risk that you are assuming by not getting vaccinated, and the risk that you're providing for others. It's basically like, for the unvaccinated, we're back at day one, except for COVID has now four times the ability to transmit than it did at the beginning. And none of this is like, I remember talking to David Wallace Wells in February, and he said in January, they had 27 models, I believe it was, the CDC had done in terms of what was going to happen with COVID. And he said two of them said it would go down. 25 of them said it would go up. And it went down. The infections went down from January to February in this country. They went down fairly dramatically. And he's like, we just don't know. There's just like, this is all new territory. And I can only imagine, to be like a guy like Ulsterholm and watching entire industries make money and entities make money off of the idea that we're going to play with that lack of data and the novelty of this by demonizing the people who are trying to figure it out. Man, that is just beyond reprehensible.
I thought it was an important point, too, about where the new variants are coming from, because I do think that we have a tendency, and I agree, Fox News has blood on their hands with the way that they're handling this thing, but Iran has, on their fifth wave, and they're still under sanctions by us. That is criminal, on a mass level.
And when you contemplate the idea, right now, it's supposedly Merkel is the impediment to getting vaccine out there. But we should be building vaccination production facilities all around the world right now. And we should then, I don't care what you got to do, U.S. government, we you want to call it a taking? Fine. We will take the as much of that technology, the patents, the technological know-how, and we will take all of it, and we will distribute it around the world. And we'll take your personnel, and everybody will get paid. But we need to get the world vaccinated.
If we can put bases around the world, we should be able to vaccinate people.
We should use the bases. Yeah. I mean, where could we find 800 bases? Like, sort of like bases. Some of we've had 800 bases around the world. We think of them as like vaccination bases. God, that would be so hard to build 800 bases. And then just coincidentally, we have them. All right, look, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more. All right, let's come back. Oh. We are back. We got this Kilmeade clip from Fox and Friends. We'll get to that, but we need to pair it with Meghan McCain's protestation.
Yes.
That nobody on Fox, particularly on the but so we'll get to that one. Let's just go to Ron DeSantis, who is doing his best. Sort of Donald Trump was like, look, it is just, it's here one day, then it just goes away.
Like
we have
magic.
No agency. There's nothing we can do. Testing is only to basically take stock. And what's sometimes better is better not to take stock.
Yeah, testing causes more cases.
Why would you want more cases to be aware of it?
COVID's only in the context of my PR campaign.
Exactly. Here's Ron DeSantis. This is just nuts. We know, and Florida is at its peak, right? I mean, Florida has never been, never had this many cases.
Hey, don't Fauci my Florida.
Exactly.
Jesus.
Let me Fauci your Florida here.
What a Fauci buzzkill.
I should have worked out a couple of those, but this is really stunning. Here's Ron DeSantis on the rising COVID infection rate in Florida.
You know, these things have a pattern. We saw the pattern last summer. It's similar. I think it started a little later. And so people should just be prepared for that. And as we get into the next month, the August and stuff, I think you'll start to see it go in a different direction. But that's just the way this thing is done. It's had a pretty consistent life cycle. And there's certain parts of the country that have certain seasonal. And so this is it.
Yeah. Now, we just spoke to one of the top epidemiologists in the country, if not the world, who said the thing that we're starting to realize about this is that it doesn't have a pattern. That unlike the flu, this is not seasonal. We have peaks at the same longitudes at the same time. But one is, you know, winter, one is summer.
Right.
We have this is, yes, the O'Reilly tides go in, tides go out.
No, you can't explain it.
Yeah, this is different. And so
But what's unique about America is that, you know, we are lagging in our vaccinations, as Canada, as we were talking about before the show, was completely behind, and now they're about to surpass us. And part of that is due to, one, yes, misinformation by people on Fox News and people like Ron DeSantis, but also the fact that the United States healthcare system is so gross and people are so skeptical of it that they are hesitant to take vaccines. Sometimes people think that they're going to be charged. Sometimes people think it's going to be ineffective or hurt them based on the history of how we've treated Black people in this country medically. So the exploitation of that by Republican politicians and conservative pundits has different layers of horror than just, you know, going after anti-vaxxers.
Exactly. All right, folks, if you're watching us on Peacock, we say adieu to you, which means goodbye in French, apparently. And
learn something new every day.
There you go. And we'll be back tomorrow, and maybe we'll do it in a different language. If you are sticking around, welcome.
Hello.
We just, I forgot to mention that we changed the hours on... Well, we didn't change the hours. The hours were changed on us.
On Peacock.
On The Choice from MSNBC. On Peacock. That's the official name of the channel. We got bumped for...
It's not the Sam Cedar Choice?
The Sam Cedar Choice. Oh. The Sam Cedar Alternative. We got bumped for the... they do like a highlight reel of MSNBC. So...
Oh.
I think, you know, like I'm happy. This show is on at 11 p.m. at night, and that we're more of an 11 p.m. show. That's what I always said. Like, if I ever did, you know, people have said to me, you should do a show on MSNBC. And I was like, you know, I wouldn't really want to do one except maybe an 11 p.m. show a Friday night.
You want to get into the Gutfeld territory?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, But they have...
Is that still going on?
Gutfeld is still happening. I think it's a very popular show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it's doing, like, wildly well.
That's...
We need to check in on that. I haven't
seen
it.
Really, really depressing.
Yeah, no, we got to check it out. Folks, just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only support the free show, you get the fun half, and you get the free show without commercials. Jointhemajorityreport.com. It is your membership that makes this show possible. I wanted to show the Kowalski shirt. We got some great shirts.
I have it.
Well, we'll show it in the fun half. Folks can check that out. Tomorrow on the program.
Here's a preview, though. It's gray. Yeah.
Tomorrow on the program, as I'm sure many of you know, tomorrow marks the one-year anniversary of Michael Brooks's passing away. And we're going to more or less do the first half as usual. We're going to play a clip of Michael at the top of the show, though. And we're going to do our interview, and then we're going to basically open up the phone lines in the second hour. For the next, you know, for the 90 minutes, and just have people call in briefly talk about, you know, what they remember about Michael. We may play a couple of clips, but that's it. That's what we're planning for tomorrow. And of course, you know, we will also give you information about other tributes to Michael that are happening online as well. So just a heads up on that. Want to also remind you that Noma Keyes show on now Tuesdays and Thursdays. You can check that out in the evenings. YouTube.com/TheNomaKeyesShow. And Matt, what's happening in the Matt Lekien Media Universe.
Yeah, for members of Left Reckoning, patreon.com/Left Reckoning, we talked to Andrew Hartman, a Marxist professor and historian, about the culture war since World War II. So you can check that out, patreon.com/Left Reckoning, available right now.
Okay, folks, see you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
No! Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back, back, back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back. Back.
I take all of it to my throat.
Alpha males are back. 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 Back.
Snowflake says what?
The alpha males are back. 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 Back.
You are a madman.
And the alpha males are back. Back.
Oh no, Sam Cedar. What a, whoa, what a fucking nightmare. Nightmare.
Bring back DJ
Denner. Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Denner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough for the break.
That's fucking nonsense.
See white people doing drugs that look worse than normal white people, and all white people look disgusting.
And the alpha males,
psych, fuck them, fuck them.
Snowflake says what?
What?
Snowflake says what?
A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. Okay. I'm making stupid money. Hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank.
All lives matter.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are black, 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 black. And the Africans are back, 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 back.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100.
Can't knock the hustle.
Come on! Fuck them. Fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday.
My birthday. Birthday.
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy.
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back. Back. Africans are black. Black. Alpha males are black. Black. Africans are back. Back.
Come on. Come on. Come on. Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy, 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 pussy.